Hey everybody, it's your good friend Dan in Little Saigon, Seattle. It is February the 27th, 2020 in the plague year, and it's around 9 a.m. here Pacific Standard Time, but where my good friend AJ is in Florida, it's probably about noon. And yeah, it's Thursday. Yeah, it's great. It's the plague year. How you doing, AJ?
Good morning, Dan. Thank you for having me on the Little Saigon Report. It's always a privilege to be on here and get to have a conversation with you. I'm doing well, thank you. No coronavirus sightings in Florida, and no monkeys with herpes. I really enjoyed your interview with Adam Kokesh. I thought it was well done and fair, and you gave your viewpoint, didn't just kowtow to the person you're interviewing, as with Dr. McPherson. So I think you make a really good interviewer, and I look forward to other interviews with other people or repeats with those same two gentlemen. It was really an interesting hour to listen to.
Yeah, I'm thinking I'm going to talk to Dr. McPherson actually again here pretty soon. I emailed him this week, and I think that we're going to do another interview on the 9th of March. And as far as Adam Kokesh goes, sometime I think closer to the convention, the Libertarian convention, I think I'm going to try to do an interview with him again, or at least, you know, maybe afterwards. But yeah, it was okay. You know, for me, it's a hard thing for me to accept the idea that any kind of voting would be useful. He made a good argument though. He said, you know, don't be negative, let's be positive. And if you are coming from it from his perspective, and he did say, you know, he's a technology optimist. He thinks that technology has been liberating people, net, technology has been empowering and creating freedom. And I'm not opposed to technology. I think it's mostly neutral, and it can be used for good, and it can be used for a lot of evil. And it can be used to liberate. It can also be used to control. So I didn't want to get too deep into that, but he did kind of make a compelling argument in his own way that maybe it does make sense to try to get some libertarian in the presidency like himself. I don't know how he would survive more than 48 hours without, you know what I mean, without being replaced or something. I mean, I don't know what it would be. Maybe his vice president would be some type of CIA plant or something. I don't know how that would happen. but I just don't know how he survives if he really wants to do what he wants to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's lots to unpack and all that, because I agree with your sentiments in the follow-up podcast involving the turning tricks down at the corner as far as what you get out of voting. And I think there's also a metaphysical consent you give to the system, the crocodile as a whole, when you go down to the voting booth that I'll never give again. And he did bring up some good points about the system, but he also has to weigh that against what we've seen with the button connected to nothing in light of the Bernie Hillary shenanigans and how the Democrats took back the House in the 2018 midterms. That didn't make any sense based on the previous. So all those things don't make sense, because I agree also with you that they're not really counted. It's all about the narrative, and Trump will probably get the bid again to keep momentum going with their current schemes. So he has a lot to balance against his optimism, which I appreciate. It's good to be optimistic, but you also have to be realistic. And so that's where I had to filter some of that out. But it was really it was nice to hear you bring that up to him. And I wanted to ask you, is he doing well within the Libertarian Party? Do they post their polls or anything? I didn't look that up.
I got to be honest with you, AJ. Even though speaking with him made me kind of think about the whole might I vote or not, I don't give a shit enough to know how he's doing. As a person, I think he's a cool dude. And I think he's, you know, a true voluntarist. He doesn't want to call himself an anarchist, and I understand why, because that word has become a loaded word. Mm-hmm. But by the same token, you know, how is he doing? I was watching bits and pieces of the Libertarian debate, the last one, and I actually thought he was one of the more well-spoken. And in a quasi-normal world, he has the skills to actually be the candidate for the Libertarian Party. And I'll go a step further because I want to, you know, I want to like balance this out. If he were the nominee for the Libertarian Party, even though I think voting's a farce, I think that would be a positive. Like, I think someone like him could potentially be disruptive in a positive way. But the other question is, how much time do we have left? And I'm not talking about, you know, the monkey flu or the Fledermaus or the fucking bat scratch fever or whatever you want to call it, the COVID-19 that keeps changing the fucking name of this thing. And I don't know whatever you want to call it, but I don't think that's the problem. I think we're facing, and I know this is scary, but I think we're facing a worldwide famine. And it could last several years. Hopefully it doesn't, but it could. And if it does, that's way worse than a fucking virus.
Yeah. And I did want to add that I really enjoyed his character. I mean, I can separate that from someone's beliefs I disagree with on the voting. And I did some research on him personally, and it, you know, he was over involved with the wars, and he also did a lot of activism and put his neck on the line and has gone
to jail. He's gone to jail. That's what I'm saying. The guy.
Very much respect. I wanted to make that clear because we all are going to have little disagreements, and you know, if it works out for him, that great for us. But I can't invest too much energy in the whole idea of voting with, you know, Gary Johnson, bake the cake. Oh my goodness. Oh God, what an idiot. So
but we're going to start our main topic, but I just thought it was good that you mentioned that. And I think it's good to just talk about it for a second. And like I said, you know, I wish him luck. I told him I wish him luck. And, you know, I told him if he was the nominee for the Libertarian Party, I will say this, there's at least a 50-50 chance I would vote for him. But it's not because I think the vote would do anything. It's more of just I might do it out of ceremony. The other thing is, too, depending upon what this thing is, this woo flu, you know, bat scratch fever, whatever the fuck it is, I could imagine them trying to do an online election this year.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
And believe me, that's going to be the most of all that, you know, that's literally going to be like that button on the web page, not connected to anything.
Yeah, you know what I mean? They finally made it your analogy with reality. And, well, they think they gave us a little taste with the Iowa caucus and whatever that bullshit was. So it's will. And wait, we'll get to time travel real quick before time travel. Dan, I heard someone talk about sewage in Oklahoma, and I know you live in Seattle, but I didn't know if you knew anything in your travels. They were traveling through Oklahoma, New Mexico area, and they said there were these areas where there was no people in the houses. It was very nice looking houses, but they were super cheap and they were going to buy it. And then they did a little more research, hung around for a few days, and there's sewage coming up from the ground in this entire city. And I didn't know if you had heard of that or where, but I can, you know, another coin in the bucket for this planet is being so disrespected. And the chickens are coming home to roost now. We see with the orcas, and this anecdotal story and my pH water 4.8. I just had to share that with you and wanted to know if you had heard about this sewage down southwest area.
I have not. And you said it was in Oklahoma?
Yes, sir.
So I'm going to do a quick search while you're on here. Oklahoma sewage homes. Sewage homes news. I wonder if that's going to. Hundreds, no. Home insurance, no. Okay. Big stink. Residents laments raw sewage. Treated human waste on farmlands.
They did say it was in somewhat of a farming community, and the realtors would not talk about it. They said it was just a temporary thing, but the person had been there for a couple of weeks, and then they moved on. They're not going to live there because it's so bad. So they may not even put it in the news, but they may gloss over and say it's a fluke. But
there's this place called Lake Eufaula, Carlton Landing, Oklahoma. The idea, now some people. The town is dumping sewage into. Anyways, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole.
Yeah, I know. I didn't mean to. I just wanted to hear if you heard it. Let's time travel.
Okay, so folks, AJ and I have already done a couple podcasts on the subject of time travel, and we're not going to rush it, but we're going to try to finish off today if we can. If we can't, that's okay. We'll do another one. We're going to do other ones on other subjects, but we'll do another one. Where we're on now in the outline, and I'll include the outline, obviously, in the podcast description on SoundCloud, is basically item four, and that is feeling the impact of future events, like feeling things in the future. And just as an FYI, as we've gone through this, AJ and I have actually kind of jumped around. So it's not like we've stuck completely to the outline. So if some of this stuff seems like we've covered it, I think that's okay. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes.
Okay. So back in, I want to say it was right around 9/11, maybe 2002. But back in 2002, AJ, I used to listen to like Art Bell and Coast to Coast AM a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And I remember him interviewing this fellow. I don't remember his name, but he talked about a project called the Princeton Egg Project. And the idea behind this is the following. There are in nature There are in nature behaviors that you can tap into to create what's called natural random behavior. One example is atomic decay, you know, with an isotope. You can tap into alpha beta particle decay as a way to generate a natural random number. Does that make sense so far?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so natural randomness. Now, I don't know if this is how the Princeton eggs work, but the idea is they had these devices that within them had a natural random generator, and these devices were connected to the network so that they would record their readings. Now you'd say, well, that sounds boring. Well, they put these all around the world, and they started looking for points in time when all of these generators became non-random at the same time, or synced up in a random way, either way. And one of the things they said is before 9/11, and again, I've never really checked the facts on this. This may be bullshit. This is just what I heard. But before 9/11, this guy claimed that all of these, you know, all of these random generators became non-random, and that was kind of like a signal that something big was about to happen. Does that make sense so far?
Mm-hmm.
And did you ever look into this, get a chance to look at this?
Yeah, I did. And I had a few questions about the process, which is, first of all, is there really such a thing as a random number generator by a computer? Is that something that could even be created?
Boy. And the thing is, it's almost like you should talk to a mathematician, because every random number generator is based upon a mathematical algorithm.
Yeah.
Some algorithm, like for example, I don't want to say the extension of pi, but usually they'll find something like the extension of pi or a Fourier series or something like that, and they'll use that behavior as a way to create a random number. But it's really not random.
Yeah, because even though they're using something that is infinite, they're not going to be able to capture the infinite. They could go up a billion places or trillion places. So it's very, very random, but it's not infinitely random and thus not truly random because it's on that algorithm cutoff.
Yeah, exactly. So they do stuff like that. Plus they'll sync it with the clock of the computer. So they'll essentially salt it. Sometimes it's referred to as salting, when you add a value to another value to change its value to make it more kind of random. They'll salt it potentially with a timestamp from the computer and things like that. But yeah, is there such a thing as a computer-generated random number? I think there are many computer scientists who would say absolutely not. It's just pseudo-random.
Mm-hmm. And I read about a number generator, random number generator, that used decibel levels in different locations, something similar to the Princeton egg effect, but instead of radioactive decay, they just had analog devices to capture changes in decibel levels throughout certain locations and on a very fractional scale. So any subtle tick up or down, like the wind blowing or a leaf rustling, it would be captured and that would generate a number. And according to this research paper, that it was more random than the ones that people could produce using just pi or something strictly in a computer, adding that analog device. I don't know if that's true, and I haven't tried it myself, but it makes back to the Princeton Egg Project, though, I do feel that there are a coalescing at times of, if you want to call it energy, I don't want to get woo-woo on you, but just of things in the realm we live on that do tie into certain events. And I'm not a big horoscope astrology guy because I feel there's so much dog shit out there as far as charlatans who try to take advantage of people, just telling them what they want to hear or globalizing their advice. But I do think there is something to timing and cycles within this place. And perhaps that 9/11 and other events that, you know, right now with this Wuhan virus, they might want us distracted away from what's, you know, ourselves or what's most important and focused on these other things during these important cycles. I'll just say, not that I feel I could determine when the next one's coming. I would just use the feedback of them trying to distract me to be a contrarian indicator. But yes, I do. I think that Princeton Egg Project had truth in it on these major events. Because Dan, do you just overall, do you feel that life, your life, and my, I'm talking anybody's individual life, has cycles to it, ups and downs, and compression moments, and you got lots of energy, or you have no energy, you feel lazy, and financially you can be doing well and not doing well for everybody, and these cycles go up and down, just like the sine wave, which is how energy travels. And seems to be a model for actual intangible things that we experience in our lives.
Well, I'm going to answer your question, but I want to, before I answer it, I want to just make it clear to everyone listening, the main subject for today's podcast is this idea, and again, we both AJ and I agree it's related to time travel, is this idea of sensing the future, not just things like precognition, but are there examples of experiments where people have studied this scientifically and not just in terms of the woohoo, you know, the doing tarot cards or stuff like that or whatever, you know, doing horoscopes, you know, looking at a person's, you know, reading palms, a palm reader. Is sensing the future a thing? You know, that's number one. Number two, here's the thing, AJ. When I was studying history in graduate school, again, and just full disclosure, I was never a great scholar. One of the courses that was mandatory is on historiography. And historiography is generally the methods you use for interpreting, studying, and researching historical events. And one of the main subjects we covered, or I should say one of the important subjects we covered, were models of history. Now, for the ancient world and for much of the world today, it's very cyclical, like you said, AJ, both personally and in terms of culture. There are cycles and things repeat themselves. And this is essentially the ancient model of the world. The Christian model of history is more like an arc. There's a beginning, there's an end, okay? So it's like you take the circle, you cut it in half, right? Mm-hmm. The modern way of looking at time and history is a line going straight up, and that's the progress model. It just keeps going and going and going. You never go backwards. You only go forwards. And that's essentially the modern historiographical metaphor of history. With respect to me and my own personal life, I would tell you I don't really know. I don't know. I mean, are there cycles? Maybe. It's kind of like, does history repeat or does it rhyme? You know, mm-hmm. Do you go through the same thing exactly the same way, or do you make mistakes and they have similar outcomes? It's different ways of looking at the same thing, and I really don't know, AJ.
Yeah, and for me, I would say it's the latter of the rhyming between that. And history is definitely not linear. If we can just look at these last 20 years and the technology stunt has been completely – there's been nothing new except unless it involves the glowing rectangle and a fucking Uber app. So it – we had the 100 years with the, you know, all the great uses of the internal combustion engine. So I just there's no way history is linear in that sense. And I like the arc in the Christian, because if you, that's where a sine wave is derived from, is the full unit circle. So just keep going around. And if we are in allegorically the time of revelations here, where people are becoming aware of how fucked out things are and what comes of it. I'm not a biblical scholar, but it does feel, from what I've read in the Bible, similar to what we're experiencing now. And we're in a compression cycle of turmoil And we can see it in the news, and I think a lot of people feel it in their own individual lives. I do at times, and it's interesting to see. But that wasn't time travel at all. So we could get back. You any thoughts on that, and then we'll move to travel.
Well, I mean, on what specifically of what you said?
Just that. Well, technology. Do you feel history is linear because technology being included?
Here's the thing, the modern view, it's not so much linear as it's a line going up. It could be non-linear, but that it's just progress. The progress model of history is it keeps going up. It doesn't have to do it in a linear way, but it just keeps getting better. And maybe you have setbacks. I mean, that's kind of the more contemporary view of this model, is it is kind of like a sine curve that's been rotated upwards, so that, you know, you do increase and you do continue to move upwards in the plane in terms of positive numbers, but you every once in a while you have a setback. That's more or less the current version that a lot of people have of this. And then there's also obviously Fukuyama, and in a lot of ways Fukuyama is a lot like the Christian model, except for it's secular. Fukuyama's endism is a lot like Christian millennialism, in the sense that you reach an endpoint in history and then it's over, it's done. For Fukuyama, you reach this endpoint and it's great and wonderful forever, and there's no more conflicts and there's no more schisms, and everybody is fine and everybody gets to have potato chips, you know, and it's it's all fine. I don't believe any of that nonsense, but that's kind of – I think there are still, even today, despite historical events, I think there are a lot of people who believe in endism and Fukuyama's endism, and it is very much like Christian millennialism, you know, to be blunt. Mm-hmm. So here's the thing. I believe personally that people do sense the future. I can't prove it. I cannot prove it. I believe that the human brain, and again, I'm gonna, before I say this, there was a book I read a long time ago. It's a really good book. And for the listeners out there, if you've never read it, you may think it's dated, but it's not. Actually, with the developments in quantum computing, I'd recommend the book. And it was written by John Penrose, who's kind of a famous mathematician from Great Britain. And it was written in, I think, 1989, in 89 or something, published in 89. And it's called The Emperor's New Mind. And Penrose basically goes through the whole, what's referred to as the strong artificial intelligence versus the weak artificial intelligence perspective on this issue. And he discusses the issue of quantum computers and stuff like that. And I don't know. I kind of think that, and I think I may have kind of got tripped up on myself here when I was going that direction. But I don't know, dude. I really don't know.
Well, I can... No, what were you going to say?
Well, no, you go ahead.
Just on the future, precognition.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, let me finish that. Okay, so Penrose thinks that the human brain is a quantum computer. And so if he's right, because the current theories concerning the brain is that you do not need to go below the molecular scale to understand the brain, which means if you understand neurotransmitters, if you understand connectivity, if you understand cellular metabolism in the brain, and you understand the full map, or what some guys call the connectome, that's all you need. Penrose's criticism, though, is that that's too macro. You know, it's like saying, let's say you're an alien, AJ. Mm-hmm. You're an alien and you're in a spacecraft and you're orbiting Earth and you're looking at the Earth and you're looking at it at night and you see all of these lights where there are cities and all these roads where there are cars driving with headlights on. Could you infer the existence of classical music or William Shakespeare from observing the lights and cities from 200 miles up and observing the fucking roads with cars on them?
Oh, absolutely not.
Well, that's kind of Penrose's point, is that for him, he believes consciousness is activated at a subatomic level. And so he believes, and again, you know, there's this thing called a Penrose staircase. So I don't know if that's still accepted as a potential theoretical model for this, but he believed that there was a mechanism at a subatomic level that both enabled consciousness and free will and made the brain as powerful as it is, separate from just the metabolism. From his perspective, a lot of what we see on MRIs and on PET scans and all these models we have, for him, it's like we're looking at the plumbing. It's like we're looking at the electrical circuits that power the brain. We're not really looking at the mind. That's Penrose's perspective. Now, why am I going off on this tangent? I'll tell you why, and then we can continue, right? Because I do believe people can sense the future, but you have to have some reasonable way of describing that if you want to have that as a scientific sort of conjecture. Wouldn't you agree?
I would agree if you're trying to prove it in a scientific method type of way. And I have, through my own rabbit holes going through, come to the conclusion that maybe some things are better left to God, and that we're not supposed to know everything. And I really like your analogy of the spaceship and the looking down the earth, relating that back to the brain, because they might be able to look at neurons and transmitters, but if you look up what magnetism is, not a description of how it acts, because descriptions are not explanations, but if you look up their current thing on just magnetism, it's very fuzzy. Like, I don't have a satisfied definition of how magnetism actually is created. You know, why does a north thing go there? Like, they can explain where it's going to go north and how the strength of the magnet and all that, but how are the actual mechanics of it? I relate that back to the brain, and that they might be able to see some of this movement, but much like a magnetism, when you put two magnets and they either repel or come together, it's like a certain type of magic. And I think that's what is going on in the brain, and it might not be revealed, because perhaps that is not our intention to get that far, or it's too driven down at the subconscious level that you can pick up on that, much like the aliens. But for myself personally, anecdotally, I can say that I've had experiences with dreams that I won't really remember the dream until I'll have a deja vu moment in real life. There was one teaching job where I had this back office room, and it was painted blue, a very specific blue color, and it was a brick wall in an old building painted all blue. And I was looking up, and when I got to that teaching job and looked up at that back room where I was going to be teaching, I had this deja vu moment, but I had never been in that building before. And it was sort of like, if you don't talk about your dreams first thing in the morning or write them down, something I don't do, but you'll forget them. It'll be completely gone. But then something might happen during the day and it'll remind you of your dream, and it'll all come flooding back. Well, that's what that experience was like, having that deja vu moment of seeing that blue wall from the same blue wall and standing in the same spot of the dream. And of course, you could say I'm just a crazy person, and that's fine. It doesn't matter. I know I can't prove it to anybody, but I've had about six deja vu moments like that, along with other things that I can't explain, but I wouldn't want to try to have someone else accept. But I would challenge anybody that going through their life, you know, is a coincidence always just a coincidence? And or is there more going on that maybe it's just a magic that it should be appreciated, that this isn't as finite as we think it is, because God is all powerful. And that means we can't even define what that power could be or how he operates in this realm, unconstrained. There's no constraints to it. So scientists to sit there and try to prove everything empirically would be impossible.
Well, and that's the thing is, like, I'm not trying to contend, AJ, in any way that we should approach this issue from a purely scientific perspective. On the other hand, I know there are people out there that would want to listen to this podcast, and they're not religious, you know what I mean? And they're still going to want to think about this in some context. But I agree with you. It's like one of those old sayings, the mind that can understand itself may be too complicated to understand.
Mm-hmm.
It's a paradox.
Yeah, I like
it's
that.
But it is. It's recursive, and it's a paradox. It's like asking yourself, how deep into the cave do you have to go to find the end of the cave? Well, what if the cave is kind of like a Möbius strip? And so you just keep going and going and going, and it never ends.
Yeah,
that you're always in the cave. You can't get out of it. Every time you try to describe the mind, especially in the context of time, because the mind plus time it's very linked in a way, but it's very spooky. There are mindless parts, I should say there are timeless parts of the mind. I do believe people can have experiences that are kind of timeless, but in reality, how we see the world is very stochastic. It's very much, you know, A, then B, then C, then D. Even if that's false or artificial, and that's also a good question that kind of relates back to where we started on this, you know, in one of our first or second podcasts, is, and I think it may have been the last one that we did on time, you know, what if there was a brain that didn't do A, B, C? What if there was a brain that did, you know, C, B, A? And all of a sudden, and you interacted with that person, you talked to that person, but they saw everything in reverse. I mean, again, to what extent is causality and the stream of consciousness and also the nature of time a biological feature?
Yeah, it's I don't have an answer to that because there's so much in the
idea of
time
itself. You don't have an answer, AJ. You're supposed I gave you 20 assignments.
I know, and I have a beautiful outline. I'm looking at it, trying to see if I can get some inspiration. But no, time is such a, which we've covered so far in the previous, time is such a slippery thing that even it may, I love that stretched out paint drying on a wall aspect of it, but that only makes it more in depth as far as how we view it. And for me, having those experiences with the deja vu dreams tells me that time is not always linear. And I heard some things you said that you would agree that there are instances where there's some quantum effects people experience. So that throws the linear part out and it just leaves the door wide open. Have you had any, not necessarily deja vu dreams, but anything out of sorts where CBA occurred in your life or things lined up that felt like too much of a coincidence to be just coincidental?
I think I have. I mean, I think you're right. I think a lot of people have these experiences and we just dismiss them. I mean, I had an experience back in 2017 where I thought I was living in a certain place and I had a dream that a nuclear bomb had gone off. And when I woke up, it was like, holy shit, this was very real. So I was a little bit bugged out. And then a few weeks later, something happened. It wasn't a nuclear explosion, but it was in personal terms, it was like, okay, this is like everything's blowing up on me. Do I think it's connected? Do I think those things are connected? I really don't know. You know, that's the problem is that it's not the problem. That is, in fact, the challenge. As human beings, by education, and sadly, probably as a result of the psychopharmacology of modern day life and the damage that's done to our body, as human beings, these days, we're very out of touch with the deeper parts of our mind. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yep. Everything's surface level and glowing rectangle. Plus, you got the fluoride. Who knows what that did to us as kids? I mean, that's documented from the 1940s. What type of these fluke occurrences we experience, people had a lot more often and were able to connect spiritually in ways that we can't even anymore because we've been so numbed out on our neurons. But the magical part that they can't describe, well, they might know, but won't tell us. And it's frustrating.
Well, that's the thing. It's like I've actually come across people who would say the following. And again, I can't prove this. I don't know this for a fact. I've simply heard quote-unquote experts say this, that fluoride damages the pineal gland. Well, what I know, though, from my own research is that the pineal gland is integral to these alternate states of consciousness. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost like, yeah, they did it on purpose. Because think about the awareness of people and their ability to take action if their brain was working correctly. Think about what they could do. Think about
night and day. Exactly. And there's just so many cattle out there that get led to the Temple Grandin experiment set up. And they think they just worship the people that are running it. And it's so, so sad when you can step back. And it also makes me want to ask the question, why are there so, what makes us different? Not just me and you specifically, your listeners, and there's others as well, but such a, that can just really, is it the courage to speak out? I don't know. And what do you think? Why are there so few people that get everything, but are well enough to where they can say the whole system's bullshit and they're ready to walk away? But that just means a life of isolation because there's so few of us. Why are there so few of us?
Maybe that's the way it's always been. I mean, think about the story of Joseph in the Old Testament, you know, in Genesis. You know, here's Joseph. He's basically abandoned by his family in Egypt. He becomes slave to the Pharaoh, and then he ends up making predictions and saying, you know, I had a vision of these, you know, these lean calves and these fat calves and four of these. And I don't remember the specifics, but the point is, he told this dream. The Pharaoh told him this dream, and Joseph interprets it. And you end up with the combination of Joseph plus the interpretation, you end up with a prediction of the future. There's going to be a famine in Egypt. So you better prepare now. Maybe it's always been the case that some people have one part of the solution and other people have other parts. We don't communicate about this. It's like it's considered a bit sketchy. And then someone says, well, I take a drug for that. It's like they'll say, oh, well, you're just having a problem. Maybe you should take a drug. And I don't. And again, there are natural compounds in nature that I think are fine for people. But the drugs I'm talking about is the stuff your doctor gives you.
Yeah. Yep. I agree. And I wanted to ask you about your relationship involving time and marijuana. You've spoken openly that you enjoy it and helps anxiety. But my question was, have you experienced any time effects when you go off into, you know, enjoy your relaxation? I've done it myself too. I'm all anything natural that comes out of the ground. Course should be legal, not controlled. It's insane. But my point and question is, anything regarding time that you've experienced and or with the pineal gland?
Here's what I'll say about weed and time, separate from my little mind trips, because those are more about almost like a private universe, to be honest with you. But one thing I've noticed with weed is that for me, an hour can seem like a day, but it's a good day. So like in some cases I can get more done because of that, because for some strength, and it's not like a stimulant feeling. It's more like all of a sudden 5 minutes becomes 10 minutes and it stretches out and I'm allowed to do more in those 5 minutes from a consciousness perspective than I would be able to under normal circumstances. I remember, you know, one time I was watching this movie. And it was like just the intro to the movie seemed like the whole movie. Like by the time the intro was done, I thought, holy shit, I can't believe it. You know, I just saw 2 hours and it's just the intro. So I've had experiences with weed where I feel like time is being stretched, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. It does. I've heard that from other people before. I haven't experienced that myself with when I've done it, but it is definitely affects you and does something that within the brain that would potentially create those effects. Have you ever on topic four, psychedelics? I don't. It's on my fuck it list is just to do a bunch of shrooms because I've heard some really trippy things about it from other people's experiences. But have you ever had any experiences with time and mushrooms, psychedelics?
Yeah, well, I've done shrooms. I did my first shrooms when this is going to be embarrassing because people say, what's wrong with you? But I did shrooms the first time when I was 47.
That's so, okay. Hey, yeah, I haven't done them at
okay
all.
Too. Listen, dude.
And I'm going to, okay. So I might be 50, 55, 60. Doesn't matter.
Anyways, with the shrooms, I mostly experienced examples of just basic hallucinations and a kind of general kind of change and shift in consciousness. Time, I didn't really notice time being as impacted. I've done LSD. I will never do LSD again. That was mostly, in some ways, LSD for me was like taking reality and turning up the volume on everything.
Oh, yuck. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I'm going to follow your life advice you've given out previously. Never to try that stuff. Never happened, synthetic for me.
Listeners, I know there are people who like LSD. If you ever want to experiment with psychedelics, A, stay natural, which implies B, don't do LSD. Because LSD is dangerous, and frankly, you don't know who's synthesizing it, and if they fuck it up, it can fuck you up. Don't ever do LSD. Do shrooms. I think shrooms, in moderation, with people that you trust, is a really good way to deal with things. Like, I think shrooms are helpful psychologically. It's a bit off topic of sensing the future, but yeah, I would say that shrooms potentially could be helpful. Have I experienced anything with shrooms where I would say it was helpful vis-a-vis my understanding of time? I don't know. I can't really say. I will say this though. Time does stretch out a little bit with shrooms too for me. Like, shrooms and weed, an hour can seem longer. You know, let me put it that way. You know, a unit of time seems to get an extra unit, but what that means, I think, is more about physiology of the brain than anything else. I really don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with now, just based on what I've heard other people speak on it. You know, Terrence McKenna, those guys.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Oh no, no. I find it just interesting. And if it comes from the ground, a lot of ancient cultures had great reservation respect for these things, and they weren't all chopped up and synthesized. Potentially other ways besides, we talked earlier about how just they put the fluoride in there and other things, vaccines, to dumb us down, and then they've taken away the stuff that would smart us up or connect us up, and we're left in razzmatazz land.
Yeah, a lot of people are. Now, on the subject of sensing the future, here's another thing I want. Can I switch topics? Is that okay?
Yeah, I was about to, too. Yep. Let's. So, Nick, your turn.
So here's the thing. You know the Little Saigon diary I'm working on?
Enjoying it, yes. Mm-hmm. Chapter
4. Well, I'm not to the chapter yet that deals with this specifically, although it does get covered in Chapter 1. But I have this idea, like, what if you could build a device that could pick up stray photons from the future? Now, again, this is really hypothetical because such a thing has never been proposed by any physicist. I don't believe, I've not researched this, but if it has, it's probably, you know, not at all as Hollywood as what I'm about to describe. So I want to put that on the table. But imagine you had this time receiver and it could receive information from the future. What would you expect it to tell you? Because if you believe, for example, like I do, that there's one universe, there's one chain of causality, well, you know, we all intersect with it, but there's one big timeline, and it just goes forward. You can't go back in time. So what would it mean in that world to pick up information from the future? And we spoke about this in the previous podcast. Like, well, if you have free will, does that imply the future is completely random? And, you know, it's kind of fun that conversation about the Princeton egg, you know, comes into play. Does that imply that the future is totally random? And what I would say is no. There may be features of reality that are more or less very predictable, or at least so predictable that if you were picking up photons from the future, you would see those. For example, let's say you had a time receiver. And you, for whatever reason, was able to tune in and you picked up commercials for McDonald's. You know, McDonald's, the fast food chain?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what if, for all reasonably possible timelines, you're always going to pick up McDonald's commercials? Because it's just going to happen. You know, one way or another, it just turns out that historically it was going to happen. Well, does that imply determinism, or does that imply that some things just happen because the odds are for them? You know what I'm saying?
Yes. I think I would first say that the odds were trending that way based on McDonald's franchise footprint. And what if you then stopped picking those up and that shift? And that was also what I wanted to ask you is what does that data look like and how are you receiving it with those photons? Is it like a histogram of certain things? Is it like literally your radio where you're getting the commercials coming through, or is
a good question. That's a good question. I think what it would be like in a simple practical case is something like being able to sift out, for all intents and purposes, radio signals, because those will be in the technological age, which, you know, in the 1940s, you're in the middle of it, right? In the technological age, most people would say, yeah, you know, things will change, but radio is going to be around for a long time. So let's imagine you were tuned into a radio station, okay, and you were tuned into it for 10 years, so you could move back and forth across a 10-year period. You would probably find periods of time where that radio signal for that radio station is pure noise, not interpretable, nothing you can do with it. And in my view, that implies what we've talked about before, the function of free will as the other way of interpreting superposition in quantum mechanics. The idea that instead of superposition and, you know, Schrodinger's cat experiment implying multiple universes, the other interpretation is that until the event occurs, it could be anything, right? Anything can happen. So you're tuned into this FM station and you get a bunch of noise. All that potentially might mean is that there's not enough decision making yet to pick an outcome. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. But you might tune into you might find a spot within that time period where it's almost, with very little filtering, like a decent signal. And that would imply that, yeah, for all intents and purposes, most choices pointed in that direction, or most choices were irrelevant to that direction. But here's what's even more interesting. You might find a point in the faucet of three separate signals because the choices have not been made yet.
I like that. I get you. Yeah.
And the three is arbitrary. It could be 50.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah. Sure.
You know, once you get done, because again, if you receive.
Is there a strength? Oh, sorry. Is there a strength in these signals? You know, am I going to rank the strengths of these? Or are they all going to have the same amplitude?
I think the strength is going to be more a function of what you can pick up. I mean, you know, it's like probably the stronger the signal is, the closer it is to you in time.
Okay.
So if I want to pick up, you know, if I'm in 1945 and I want to pick up a radio signal from the year 2045, it's probably going to be pretty weak, you know, because it's just so far in the future. That's the thing. When you're talking about free will and causality, when you get that far in the future, you're talking about combinatorial explosion and a tree. You know, it's like when people look at chess playing trees, like, you know, if I make this move, you make this move. The expanding tree of all human choices over the next 100 years, how would you pick the leaf node? How would you pick the leaf node 100 years from now? How would you do it? But more importantly, how would you even be able to decipher it? Because the weakness, the total weakness of any particular set of choices would be absolute manifest if you go forward in time far enough. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is another way of saying it's just too far in the future. You can't. So for me, the weakness or strength of signal is more of a function of temporal distance than whether or not – or it's more of a function of temporal distance than free will. What I would say, the noise in the signal, that's the free will part of it.
Okay. And with the three – similar signals.
And that's three's arbitrary. The three's arbitrary.
Of course. Yeah, just multiple signals that are similar in event with McDonald's or JFK. Would you then, is that where you would start ranking them with your the spanning trees on, because of course it could be more than three, to help you make inferences and choices in the present?
Maybe, but for now, let's just put the spanning tree thing on the bookshelf. Is that okay?
You know I like spanning tree. And you brought that up. I didn't even know.
I did. No.
Well,
I
can't help it, man. It's another smart idea from you. Okay, no spanning tree talk. Got it.
No, that's not. I wasn't trying to be a jerk, AJ.
I like to tap into your mathematical mindset.
I'm not a physicist, so I am doing the best I can with the tools I have intellectually. What I would say is that topology generally is a science. Graph theory is a science, is going to be very helpful, but so is basic mathematics around stochastics. Mm-hmm. And I would say Markov models, which are a subclass of topology, Markov models could be very useful. But, you know, even if you did, like, let's say you had a Markov model and you fed the data into it and it told you there are three potential outcomes for JFK. And let's talk about that scenario.
That'd be fun.
One scenario is the one we have, which is JFK was killed by, you know, Lee Harvey, blah, blah, blah. The deep state covered it up, blah, blah, blah. Who the fuck knows what really happened? That's scenario one, deep state assassination. Scenario two is, what if on the day of the JFK assassination, there were one or two World War II veterans in the crowd who were armed and they took action?
Mm-hmm.
Because it could have happened, dude. That's the thing. A lot of people don't realize assassinating anybody is not that easy. okay? No. It's not that tricky. Assassinating the president, even if you control every fucking player on the chessboard, is still not that easy. So imagine a scenario where one or two World War II veterans are in the fucking crowd in Dallas, and all of a sudden they hear a shot and they just say, you know what? We're going to head towards the president. We're going to take our chances, but we're going to protect him. Or maybe they see the people shooting and they take him out. Mm-hmm. That could be the second signal. And again, you know, in that scenario, let's say JFK is wounded but not killed. Well, in that scenario, you might actually have a different, number one, a totally different future. Like the America of today could be a completely different country if JFK's assassination had been fucked up. Agree or disagree?
Well, I would agree.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that could be the second scenario. Oh, go ahead.
No, it was much different. Yeah.
Okay, the third scenario, because again, I'm assuming the baseline, which is a deep state plot against the president. I'm not disputing that. That's the base. Okay, the base case is a deep state plot against the president. CIA, deep state, blah, blah, blah. The third scenario is this. Deep state plot, successful, but for whatever reason, it ends up getting blamed on the Soviets. That scenario would be bad because that scenario probably would have led to World War III. I mean, and then it would have been nuclear eventually, and that would be, you know, kind of the end of human civilization. So here we have one event, the assassination of the president, the same people, the same actors, the same participants, but different outcomes. You follow me so far?
I am following you, and that would have been picked up on the time receiver. And would have someone... What would someone do with that information? Say they get their it's 1960 and they pick all that up. Good signal. They feel very confident on those three outcomes. What, you know, is there any way to act on that information? Or it, of course, doesn't be JFK, but for anything.
That's kind of my point.
That would change it, though.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Now it's coming around that how would you – you'd have to weigh those outcomes with your choices if you, and then if – on that the timeline you mentioned, if the whole thing is going to happen no matter what, if you could have done anything to stop it. But yeah, out of time, that it opens up so many possibilities if you could get that information. But then if you act on it, that then could potentially shift it. So
go ahead.
No, that just it always gives me a lot to think about when you're talking, and I get caught up in my own
it's okay
reflections on what you're saying. Because it's so deep. But on JFK, have you heard the theory that he didn't get killed at all? Have you heard that one at all?
No, but for this example, can we hold off on that theory for a second?
That's a good one, though. Another podcast.
Well, maybe. No, absolutely.
No, it would take me some time, but it's pretty compelling.
Well, so here's what I'm saying is that let's say the year is 1960, and you have these – three scenarios based upon listening to an FM radio. Well, let's say it's an AM radio station. So you have an AM radio station you're tuned into, and you have these three scenarios, okay? And you have the information, and the one thing they all three agree on is JFK, someone's going to try to kill him. All three agree on that. Here's the question. If you do tell the president, and for some reason the president goes ahead and makes a choice and decides to do something different, does that in some way violate anything foundational in terms of cause and effect, do you think?
Yeah, that's what I was stuttering about earlier, because I was trying to think how it would affect it. I really don't know how. I would say it would change things if you decide to act.
I'm not talking about changing things. I'm saying, do you believe it would violate any fundamental rules of physics or nature that we understand right now?
To just know that information? Or?
Well, okay, but again, do we really know it? I told you that the number three was arbitrary. I told you that, right? Mm-hmm. And that in all likelihood, events are distributed like the normal curve, like the Gaussian curve. Okay, there's a central tendency, and then there's the tails, and the tails are things that probably don't happen, right?
Yeah.
Most of the time. So is there something foundational about knowing that knowing one thing, that it does look like the president is going to get assassinated. That's number one. And number two, that there's these three possible outcomes. Does knowing that A, prove determinism, or B, violate any fundamental rules that you can think of that govern the universe?
All right. I like the probability and of how we're interpreting it. So got that. And then does it, so your first question was, does it violate determinism?
Because
it's all probability. So you still have your free will to try to move the needle towards one of those outcomes.
Exactly.
If you wanted to. And then what was the second question? Part B?
Well, I mean, basically it's one question. Does this violate any basic rules? Is there anything about this idea that you can think of so far where you'd call bullshit and say, no, this can't happen because of this and this and this?
No, under the assumption that you can create this device, which we're going to assume, and get this information, this is how I would imagine if this device existed, how it would be used, and exactly how you described with the histogram of probabilities, the bell curve of likely outcome. I think that might be what they're doing at CERN and running scenarios of like coronavirus stuff, of what they put out in the media, and then look at the histogram of how people are going to react to it. So it's very realistic and doesn't violate anything because it's all based. It's like your take on Schrodinger's cat. It's a probability thing, and you're making inferences based on these signals that you're correlating on the graph. It's the perfect way to do it with such an abstract idea of time and things that could happen.
And I just wanted to, and I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but I wanted to put you on the spot for one reason, because I'm going to give you my answer. I see nothing about this, if it were possible. I don't see it. Are you still there?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I just heard something banging. Sorry about that. I don't see anything about this that would violate any of the fundamental rules of physics as I understand them, for the reasons mentioned. It's probability. It's not guaranteed. This isn't certainty. This is still a likelihood, okay? And here's what's most important. Given this probability, all three of those things might not happen. Like, even the president might not get assassinated for the mm-hmm. same reason that you have this kind of situation of foreknowledge. Foreknowledge changes people's choices, okay? And so I think something like this would be feasible. Like, I think the universe would allow it because it does not violate cause and effect. You're not seeing the future. You're seeing possible futures. Big difference, wouldn't you agree?
Big difference, and more realistic that fits in, because it would be impossible to see the future in terms of what is guaranteed 100% going to happen, because once you see that, you've now open things up, and like you said, that means we don't have determinism, we don't have free will. So in your scenario with the probabilities, you're just getting inferences, and those are shifting all the time. You know, am I going to have a heart attack? Well, did I go to McDonald's every day for the last week? I probably just shifted myself a little bit closer to, yes, having a heart attack sometime in my life. But that's just cause and effect, but you're getting additional information with your time receiver. So no, it doesn't violate anything once you have that, because you're just going to be shifting the probabilities in one direction based on what you want your outcome to be.
Hey, can I – okay, cool. I had to double check something. Sorry. Uh-oh. I was looking at something on my recorder, and it totally screwed me up, so I'm doing fine. Sorry. I saw something weird on a clock, and it said, wait a minute, this looks wrong to me, but it's okay. Okay. So yeah, I don't see anything that violates.
No,
I don't personally. Now, here's what's interesting though. If you could do something like this, if you could open up a window to possible futures, wouldn't that be an incredibly powerful tool?
Yes.
It's like what you mentioned about CERN. I mean,
yeah, that's what I was going to bring up again, because I feel that they have some of this capability. Whether it's, we got the Mandela effect on the list and the predictive programming, if they're using that, whether it's totally just men and women knowing ahead of time that they're going to blow something up and then put it in the Simpsons, or is it that they have these probability calculators that they can get those inferences and then use it to create the predictive programming or switch stuff around? I don't know. What do you think about our current system's ability to do something like your JFK 3 outcomes?
Well, I for one, call myself cosmologically agnostic a lot. And so I try to keep my mind open to some extent without just, you know, accepting any crazy idea out there. When I started working on this writing project, you know, because I'd read, you know, Joseph Farrell. He's written a lot about the Nazi secret projects during World War II, and I've read some of his stuff, and I think you've been exposed to him too. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that occurred to me early on, based upon research I'd done a long time ago, is that maybe with very high temperature, heavy plasmas rotating at a high velocity, high speed, maybe you could get something called, I think it's called frame dragging. It's an idea that Einstein had, that you could create a twist in space-time, and that the process of frame dragging or twisting space-time could potentially act like a sort of time machine. Like it could potentially mm-hmm. be a means what by – yeah. And so the weird idea is that if you're doing that, could it also be a way of punching a hole into the future? And when I say punch a hole into the future could be thought of as a hypothetical, an abstract hypothetical that probably does exist in the same way the past does. It just exists in a different kind of way. The past is like we were talking about in a previous podcast, you know, all of that hard rock below the current now, that hard surface, that lead, that titanium, it's there. If you had enough energy, maybe you could get to it, but it's just not feasible. The future's like the opposite. The future's like, you know, Brownian motion in a gas with temperature and the trajectories of particles. You know, there's a lot of randomness in just, you know, a gas under pressure, as you well know, molecules and atoms bouncing around. So what if the future is more like that gas, in the sense that there's lots of Brownian motion, there's lots of a potential chaos? And yeah, there might be, in that sort of chaos theory sense, strange attractors. Like you could say there's some strange attractor involved around the assassination of JFK, for example, or maybe even the presidency of JFK. Maybe there's a strange attractor there that causes these things to converge. But you still have a lot of chaos. And so here's what I would say. Like, let's say you could open a hole into the future. And let's say that frame dragging or twisting space-time is one way of doing it. Well, if you do that, then I guess what I'm saying is maybe you would get photons. And again, another way of talking about a radio signal is to talk about photons. But whether you want to talk about radio waves or not, you could open up this hole to the future, and then you get these radio waves. I can imagine there are people on Wall Street who probably would invest $1 billion to build something like this if they could do it. Even if they could only do it, you know, even if, like, for your example, and thank you for sort of narrowing the time frame, even if the window is only 2 years in the future, 2 years would be huge. But here's the problem, and this is where I want to connect it to the Mandela effect. What if they're doing both, AJ? What if they're taking peaks into the future and they're tweaking the present, and they're taking peaks and they're tweaking the present? They're looking 10 years into the future, then they make a decision to do something. If the universe allows that, my instincts are that that would be really fucking dangerous.
Well, look at our current paradigm.
I know.
I think that's exactly what they're doing at the places like CERN. On some level, I could never describe how it's actually being implemented, but I think you get close to it with the relativistic effects. And I don't believe we live on a spinning ball. That's the only thing I'll rule out. I'm open to everything else. But what if we replace space-time with ether? And everything you said fits in then with the ether, that there's more in this around us, this existence, that those feelings you get in that Nikola Tesla would call the ether, like fish swimming in time, we swim in the fish swimming in water, we swim in the ether of time. And when they do these high speed or the linear particle accelerator experiments, they are grabbing information just as you're describing from the ether. And it doesn't matter space-time or ether. I like the concept of ether. To me, it's more makes more sense based on my own experience. Sorry, ruffling my outline around. On what I've experienced and can see around me. But it's very scary to think that they could do these things and be manipulating. But if you look at it's the way they're able to keep control of the narrative. Back to my question earlier, how do so few people become aware of this, how wrong things are? And
AJ, can I pause you for a second?
Okay, yeah.
And I'm going to let you finish this thought, but my first answer would be that there is a non-technological, non-science fiction way of explaining it, and that people – how can I say this? A lot of people are easy to fool because people want to believe certain things. That's how magicians work. That's how con artists work. That's how every grift throughout history has ever worked. People – you know, if you have a family and you have kids – people want to believe their kids are going to be safe and happy, correct?
Yeah, I know that there is a major psychological component to it. I agree. They want to keep things going status quo because they're safe and they think they're safe and they're got food on the table and some
They're beautiful, or you're a beautiful fucking star. You're a starlet, and someone comes along and says, "Oh, you're so beautiful. You're such a great starlet. Want to be in my movie?" And maybe the movie turns out to be a sham. But the point is, they appeal to your vanity. Yeah. They appeal to your weaknesses. And they sell you on a bad idea. And then you get the old cognitive dissonance kicking in. It's like, it's kind of like what it's also been referred to as the sunk cost problem. You know, where you know what I mean? I put 10 bucks into something. Well, I put 10 bucks into it, so I got to put in 10 bucks more. Now I got to put in 50 bucks. Oh, shit. Now I got up in $1,000. All of a sudden, you're hugely in debt because you couldn't accept the idea that $10 you spent was just bad, and you should just give up on it.
Yes, a lot of sunk cost fallacy. People continue their momentum with the crocodile because they get their buckets of gold and are already tied in to the system. And it's scary to think that, oh, I might have to go chop my own wood and build my own house. I think that sounds like a challenge, but especially if you have a community of people around you. But a lot of people are comfortable fat cats, and they like being the dog that sits on the owner's heels. Dan, I just want to agree with you that, yes, there's a huge psychological component to it. But what about an event like Las Vegas, the Las Vegas shooting where allegedly 500 people got shot, and 60 died?
Really 500 that got
500
shot?
500 shot, yes,
you see,
sir.
I was in the military, dude, and I remember that story. It was 2017, October, I think,
yes.
2017.
Yes, sir. Yep.
And I was in Ohio at the time, and I remember hearing the fucking story, and I thought, this is a 60-year-old man who has never been to the Q course, which, oh, by the way, if you know what the Q course is, it's Special Forces training. He's never been a SEAL. He's never been Marine Force Recon. Yeah, maybe he had prior service. I didn't really know. But he's a 60-year-old man, and what floor was he on?
30th.
Okay, so he was a couple hundred feet up, right? At least.
Yeah.
Okay, a couple hundred feet up, firing probably at a distance of at least, 100 to 200 meters at least, I would say. But I would say at least 400 to 500 feet. If you took that angle, that line in the triangle from where he was at to where he was shooting, my guess is that was somewhere between 500 and 600 feet at least, wouldn't you say?
Oh yeah, very far away. And
how long did the whole thing last?
That's part of the ridiculous elements. I think 13 minutes, but I don't know if you've been to Las Vegas, but the place is crawling with cops and security cameras.
I've been there.
Cameras,
security,
oh, everywhere.
Everywhere.
So, yeah, and I brought up Vegas because I agree that the narrative, of course, is insane. But I don't think 500 people were shot. I don't know if anyone was shot. I don't know. I don't want to make any statements because I wasn't there. But it seems unlikely that many people received bullets. So how did they keep all the doctors and nurses quiet? Well, what if they have these quantum abilities involving time and involving memory wipes, like from the 1996 movie Men in Black with that pen? what if they could do something like that and they make the doctors and nurses, that's what I'm really focused on here. Where are there any doctors or nurses that would speak out and say, we didn't have all these patients show up and get treated. Nobody came to our hospitals. How do they keep everybody quiet? And look at some other events as well. But do they have these quantum effects involving time and involving other entanglement things where they can someone's memory? And yes, they're men and women with the device, just like the movie. But do you think something like that is possible?
Let me put it this way. If John Penrose is right and the brain is a quantum computer, then that's both a strength and potentially a weakness. It's a strength because it allows people to tap into things, into frames of consciousness that would give them great information. That's a strength. It's potentially a weakness for the same reason, because this is a bidirectional pipeline. If you, mm-hmm. you know, the pipeline that opens up that allows you to grasp the wider range of the universe is the same pipeline that potentially someone with the right technology could shove a lot of terrible ideas down, a lot of consciousness, a lot of memories potentially. In yeah. fact, an entirely yeah. different stream of consciousness.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine this. Okay, I want to go on this for a bit. Is that
like
okay
this.
With you?
Oh, I like where you're going.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it kind of, you know, in a way, we've already skipped to step to section five, which is using torsional behaviors to see the future.
Yes.
And I don't want to talk about the past because, frankly, I just don't believe it's possible to see the past. But here's the thing. Let's say they understand the nature of time, and whether it's, you know, quantum and relativistic, or whether it really is something to do with wave propagation in the ether. For now, let's just say that's just an issue that someone else can solve. Is that fair?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, so let's say they have technology that allows them to see into the future. And when they learned about this, they also learned about the relationship between the brain and reality, because it would make sense. These things, I think, are connected.
Yes. Oh, and so they may have stumbled upon it while doing that. Who knows how they found it? I see. Ooh, I like this, Dan. Keep going.
So imagine they had the technology, and this is where it gets really weird. Imagine they had the technology whereby they could hijack the consciousness of a group of people. Like, they could hijack the experiences, the causality chains, everything. They can't do it everywhere. That'd probably be infeasible. That's, you know, that's what God does. But imagine they could take an area, like maybe a few square miles, and put it into a bubble. And that bubble is a complete fake reality, completely fake, completely pixelated. Nothing about it's real. And while that bubble exists, you've got the story of, you know, the dude up in the fucking 30 floors up, you know, shooting like a Marine Force recon, taking out all these people. And then once the bubble disappears, all that people are left with is the aftermath and almost no real memory of what happened, which means that they got a memory, but frankly, it's mostly memory that was given to them, either as a result of this experiment, or frankly, the people just, you know, they suffered a kind of amnesia. And so whatever people told them, they said, oh, yeah, yeah, that's what happened. That's what happened. Imagine they could hijack reality for some area like that. Then what couldn't they do? What couldn't they convince you of, really? What Mandela effect couldn't they create?
Yeah, it's very scary, and that I don't know if they have that. It just seems with some of these mass events that no one's ever come out and said anything, and they admit that it's a possibility that they could do it. And we know that they tell us that they're messing with time at the CERN place and trying to smash those atoms and get things down and look at quantum things. They put a lot of information out, not sure how much it's true, but that make us aware that they are trying to tap into it. But it's very similar to military technology, where I don't know if you recall when the actual cell phone was invented, but military tech is light years ahead. Did you have any experiences with military tech being ahead?
Actually, here's the reality of that. DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA might be decades ahead. The shit that you get exposed to as an ordinary grunt in the military, sadly, is sometimes decades behind. Well, not decades. It's sometimes behind the curve.
Yeah, maybe like special ops. But
it would have to be special ops. Dude, yeah. The stuff that's futuristic is not the stuff that ordinary. Like, I was just an officer in the Army, dude. I saw tech that was actually kind of crappy compared to what was available to civilians. Like, when I went into the service in 96, the tech we had in the field, like, there was something called the SHTU, the simple handheld terminal unit that we used in air defense. It was basically a black and white LCD screen with really crappy buttons and really terrible software. And it was really just 20-year-old technology that, well, maybe not 20 years old, but 10 years old. And at that time, Moore's Law was in such a rapid ascent in terms of the curve that 10 years might as well been 20 years.
Yeah.
So, oh,
yeah.
So
at that time, 90s were huge for technology, the speeds and all that. Yeah. I see it. And I while you're speaking, I thought of the Jeep global positioning system. Has 1944, the LORAN system was a land-based version, you know, before any satellites. Yeah. So they might, yeah, they could. But I like the theory you had about the area being basically quarantined off and memory hold and then replaced, or just amnesia. You could just do amnesia and have people around them fill it in for them.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I don't want to spend too much time on
that.
But the point is,
that was good.
Here's the thing, though. Imagine they could do this. Let's just keep it very high level.
All right.
Imagine they had the means of detecting within a sphere of 2 years all the possible futures. They had the means of receiving information from the future that gave them a general distribution of all these possible futures. They had the computer system to interpret the data, and they had the means of getting the data. Well, you and I both believe we know the motivations of these people. They're not good motivations. So it seems more likely than not that they would use this information to fuck with time, to fuck with the future. Because why wouldn't you? I mean, if Goldman Sachs had the ability to get a vision of the market 2 years from now, even if it wasn't perfect, even if it was just a histogram of likely outcomes, like let's say you're talking every possible future showed the same thing, $300 a barrel, even if it was a different future. I think they would use that information. But the question is, then what? Let's say they use it. Let's say that Goldman Sachs uses it, and they decide to start making purchases. And they're not so sophisticated. So they start making purchases, and they cause other people to make purchases. And all of a sudden, their attempt to beat the market, you know, to essentially what's referred to as front running. But this could be thought of as temporal front running. I mean, basically their attempt to front run the future in a sense, which sounds weird, but that's what they would be doing.
Yeah, it's precisely what they're doing. Yeah.
Hey, what if they did that, but then they had inadvertently caused the price to crash? Like all of a sudden they get involved, other people get involved. Maybe this causes more drilling. Maybe they discover other sources of energy. And then all of a sudden, this great bet that Goldman Sachs makes just blows up in their face. That's one scenario where taking information from the future and acting on it could potentially cause problems.
Yeah.
You know, and again, I don't care what happens to Goldman Sachs. If they go broke, fuck them. I don't care.
But
it gets worse, though. Because what if it's not about Goldman Sachs? I mean, there was this movie that came out back in the 2000s based upon a Philip K. Dick book. And I think it was called Paycheck. And the basic story of the movie Paycheck is they did have a way of seeing the future. But it wasn't it wasn't probable futures, I should say. It was mostly from the perspective of the film, it was made out to be very certain. Like, mm-hmm. Absolutely, this is going to happen. We see the future. This is going to happen. Well, actually, you know what's funny in the movie? They talk about a plague. They talk about a plague coming, and they talk about how this company was able to get ahead of everyone else on a cure. Now, think about Event 201, and think about that article that came out a couple years ago about Disease X. Oh, boy. In a couple of years, there's going to be this disease X, and we don't know what it is yet, but it's going to be horrible. That's kind of vague and prophetic. Vague. Wouldn't you call that vague and prophetic, the disease X scare from a couple of years ago? Because there were articles about this. You can go and research online. Listeners, excuse me. You can go back online if you want to. Research disease X. there are articles going back to 2018 at least, and it's all and they're vague enough that it's like, what the fuck are they talking about? There's this weird vague thing that's coming. They don't know what it is, but it's coming. That's kind of weird. And then the Event 201 thing. It's like they're having this simulation for a pandemic, mm-hmm. but and it's and technically, here's the thing that's important. If the first COVID-19 patient was in the hospital in the first week of December, based upon what we know about incubation periods for this bioweapon, that means that this person probably got infected at the end of October, which means right about the time or just after Event 201, this whole thing kicked off.
Yeah, very coincidental. And if whatever this virus is, it's definitely not organic. And that they, but bioweapon or some other form, they have allowed it or are just perpetuating lies. One or the other, both are not good for people's psyches.
But AJ, here's what I'm getting at though, okay? Let's say that they're the ones who are going to do this. They're the ones who are going to release this, but they are also observing their decision in the future. So they're, it's you can imagine it. Imagine, okay, and this is really a hard thing to do an analogy for, but imagine you had to unscrew a bottle, for example. You know, maybe that's not a good example. Let's say you had to hammer a nail. Imagine you had to hammer a nail on Mars. There's a robot on Mars. It holds a hammer. There's a mm-hmm. nail. And you need to hammer it in. Mm-hmm. That's great. That doesn't sound so hard. The problem is the information cycle time, because of the speed of light, means that it's going to take about an hour for you to send a signal to the fucking robot, and it's going to take about an hour for you to find out what happened. Okay? Now, all of a sudden, hammering a nail sounds a lot harder, doesn't it?
Yes, and that's a very good analogy you put out there. I see how you're connecting it back to the virus of they're going to trickle some out and then see, well, how fast is it going to spread? And but it takes time for people to show up with symptoms. And much like the robot, you got to make a new decision how fast you want to strike or how much torque you want to put on the nail.
The problem is, unlike the robot – oh, sorry, go ahead.
No. I'm with you. Yeah. Unlike the robot,
where at least there's some level of kind of physical certainty, the future does not exist until it exists. It's like Schrodinger's cat. The future does not exist in any sense until it's in the past. Until you've opened up the fucking door and seen if the cat's alive or dead, the cat could be alive. The cat could be dead. Imagine doing Kentucky Windage on choices. That's what it is. It's Kentucky Windage on choices. I make a choice. I observe the effects. Oh, fuck. I fucked up. I better make a different choice. Yeah. Oh, shit. I fucked up worse. Shit. All of a sudden, because here's the thing. If this is a bioweapon, the assumption would be, well, they've got a vaccine. Well, the problem is it's nature. And nature may or is not kind, and nature's not linear, and nature has its own fucking minds. And nature is both simple and complex. To believe that you can control the destiny of some virus that you fucked with is hubris. So I can imagine these fuckers saying, okay, we're going to do this thing, but we're going to use the time receiver to make sure we don't fuck up. So we'll do it. We'll observe the future. We'll do it. We'll do something else. We'll observe the future. This is like hammering a nail on Mars, dude. But you're doing it from the Earth. And I gotta say, I think it might be impossible. Now, does that mean a time receiver is useless? No, it does not mean that. But I would say this, if you designed a time receiver, you would probably want, in my opinion, to keep it a secret. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, you absolutely would. And I see them potentially, the scenario outlined could be going on as we speak. We don't know how often they check it, though. It was funny, the Kentucky wind is just imagining, I'm like, oh, we got too much coronavirus over here. We got to pull back a little bit and making those adjustments on the fly. Hopefully people are not too impacted. It's nothing to joke around about. But it's very likely what you're saying, and scary that they could have this. but we know they're ill-intentioned and they're sloppy at times with certain things they do, because maybe they are going off of probabilities and then their probability doesn't work out the way they're hoping for and they've got to shift to try to move things back in another direction. On the receiver, I keep wanting to ask you this question. How often do you think they could be getting these new signals? Because if they're able to continuously have it feed the new futures and then somehow aggregate that into a composite, maybe involving some spanning trees, then they maybe have more accurate data. But my main question is, how often do you think they, couldn't it be theoretically just always continually grabbing information? So it's, the Mars analogy is very good. I like it, but maybe it's more like hammering a nail on Earth.
Yeah, I think the Mars analogy is correct, and I'll tell you why. If something like this is feasible, it's probably only feasible at a certain scale. And because of that, it's probably very expensive and probably something that you'd want to keep secret and very resource intensive. So I actually, the reason why I use the analogy to Mars is because take a look and they could act, and then maybe a week later or a month later, they could take another look, but I don't think they could do it continuously. And that's number one. Number two, I don't know if you're aware of this, but there was a major super collider project back in the 80s that was supposed to be built around Dallas. In fact, there's still materials left there. Okay, a giant, giant collider. It was going to be the superconducting super collider project. They were going to build it around Dallas, and it was going to happen. And then all of a sudden, for whatever reason, it got canceled. And if people say, well, they didn't have the money. Listen, after finding out about all the trillions that have gone down the toilet bowl, that's bullshit.
Oh, yeah.
That's bullshit. They had the money. But here's the thing, though. If the purpose of the accelerator is maybe the cover story is, well, we're studying large hadron collisions and we're studying the boson and we're studying protons. Okay, whatever. Maybe that's really happening, because you'd have to do it because you got to keep the physicists happy that's what the purpose, you know, you have to believe that's the reason. But what if the real purpose is to take these glimpses into the future, to pick up these signals? Every time they run this thing at high energy, it's like I said, they're punching this hole into the future. It's kind of like, you know how in the previous time podcast, we talked about this notion of the now not being a single point in time. You remember that? Mm-hmm. Well, what if, AJ, what if using this technique, they can expand the now? So that all of a sudden, they get to see a little bit further. It's not time travel. It's more like they're just taking a freaking lever, and it's like poking up the tent or moving the tent out further. We're in the same tent. The tent is the now. But they can push up against it, and they can see a little bit further outside the fucking tent. That's, I think, what they're doing, if that's what they're doing. And if that's what they're doing, it is really dangerous, okay? There might be a less dangerous way to use this. Like one – but I don't even know if this is less dangerous. One potentially less catastrophic way of using this is just to mine information, which means, you know, hey, cool technology. Hey, they're flying – they're flying spaceships and they're doing this. Maybe one purpose of this type of technology is simply to get these glimpses into the future to learn technology.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That makes a lot of sense. And I first of all wanted to say I like that analogy of Mars, switching back from Earth back to Mars because of how much energy. You bring up a great point on that. Just wanted to agree with you on that. The second thing is the technology. We saw this huge explosion in the from 1900 to 2000, especially around that transistor, when that transistor came out. That just still blows my mind when I think about how they're able to navigate all that electricity at such a nano level back then. And they discovered it. And who knows, Donald Trump's uncle found Nikola Tesla's papers. I don't want to get into that at all, but just agreeing again with you that they could be using this to expand their window into the technology of the future. And we know that technology they're going to grab, but not going to use it to help us at all. So it is unfortunate, but it does seem like that CERN is a great cover story. And sure, they might have some atom work going on, but also could be all that, the relative, if they're The CERN in Europe is circular motion, correct?
It is. And the one they were going to build in Dallas was going to be a circular accelerator too.
Yeah. See, I think that's, you're on to something. We have those, we have to do one more podcast because that was the last.
Well, no, I'm not saying
the last podcast was the acceleration, the conservation of a base motion vector. And whether it's on Earth or outside of Earth, there is something, I said, powerful, leveraged, magical, all the above in physics when you get rotational motion. I look at all the tools that I in my garage, they all involve a spinning circle. You're tired. So, and though I know you might, that's just basic examples, but it is very powerful when you get those forces of rotating things built some rotationally, that imagine doing it at such a large level, what, you know, tearing holes in the ether or the universe, space, time, it doesn't matter, but that they might be tapping into that is just fascinating. That's some of the theories you presented here today.
Okay, and I know we've got to close out, and you're right. We are going to go ahead because this is great, and we have a lot more to talk about. So this will not be the last podcast on time travel. But before we close this out, I just want to summarize my thoughts, if that's okay, AJ, very quickly. Mm-hmm. Here's my idea, and this is totally hypothetical. I have no proof of this, but imagine the reason why they canceled the superconducting collider was because they were afraid that people in the United States would discover the real purpose. Like, if they did it in Europe, if they did it, you know, in the mountains, in the Swiss Alps, so to speak, on the border with a couple different countries, nestled in the homeland of, you know, the Bilderberg type people, in the homeland of, you know, the people from which Skull and Bones was born. If they did that, they could keep a lot of stuff under control as far as information, as far as keeping it secret. You follow me?
I am, and I was going to ask you that. And my guess was, if Dallas is so busy and harder to control their narrative of what's really going on there. And, you know, it's unfortunate because that oil trader in Bellevue could have really used that. You know, Dallas, say it's not too far of a trip for him to have gotten that information, but he's passed on, I think.
Yeah, he would have had a terminal that he could have plugged into. but this is my point. Back in the 80s, AJ, even though journalism was infected and problematic back then, you could make an argument that it was less corporate.
Yes.
I mean, it was still corporate, but it was less corporate.
Yeah,
so
outlaws, I guess, you could say, of media, hopefully, I guess. Yeah, I agree with you. Mm-hmm.
So the fear they would have had is somebody would have gotten nosy, someone would have looked into this, and it would have been, you know, here you go, guys. This is what they're really doing. They're studying quantum mechanics and subatomic particles and quarks, but that's bullshit. What they're really doing is getting momentary glimpses into the future. Now, I want to close this out with one other thought, AJ, and then I'll let you put your thoughts, okay? Mm-hmm. You still there?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Think about prophecy. Think about the story of, you know, Joseph interpreting the Pharaoh's dreams. Think about Nostradamus. Think about, you know, Edgar Cayce and all these prophets throughout history. What if what they're really seeing isn't the future, but possible futures?
And that would explain why sometimes they're right and some people are more accurate, but not. I don't think any prophet is on record of being 100% perfect because they were gay. It has to be probabilities. I'm glad you really drilled down on that, Dan, and please finish your thoughts. But I'm really coming around to what you're saying on the correlation of the future just as a set of probabilities that perhaps are going on. CERN, we can't prove it, but is regardless, it is a probability. But if you were able to grab it with the receiver, seems exactly how it would be done and why sometimes things don't always go as the prophets say, but they can be right a lot, like an Edgar Cayce or something. Yeah, that's really, really good. Please keep finishing.
Well, so here's the thing, though. You have the same problem with the Nostradamus that you have with the time receiver. If you have the information and you don't act on it, it's just information. Mm-hmm. If you have the information and you write a book like Nostradamus, then all of a sudden people can act on it. In fact, this might explain why Nostradamus kind of encrypted in a way or obfuscated his predictions, that people believe that he took his predictions, but then he kind of hid them a little in language. Maybe the reason why Nostradamus did this is because he had an intuition that the future is not fixed. And if you write a book saying, this is what's going to happen for the next 1,000 years, well, shit, I'm going to read the book and I'm going to say, fuck, I'm not going to have lunch at that fucking bat soup restaurant. Fuck that. I'm not getting my bat poop problem. Fuck you. The problem is that all of a sudden people can act on that information, and then the thing that he's predicting does not happen.
Yep.
One reason. That's one reason why prophecy fails. The other reason is free will. Even whether you can predict the future or not, people are always making choices. Guess what? Ladies and gentlemen, listeners, Schrodinger's cat is both alive and dead until the door is open. We do not know. Until what is in the future becomes the present and what is in the present becomes the past. Only when it's in the past can we say the cat is dead, the cat is alive. But until it becomes the past, anything's possible. Could be alive, could be dead, might have ended up, you know, being saved by an alien. We don't fucking know. Okay? That's kind of the problem. It's sort of the paradox of prophecy. And in some ways, it is related to that classic myth of Cassandra. You know, what if predicting the future is a doomed thing anyways? What if no one's ever going to listen to you? What if the only outcome is your own destruction?
Mm-hmm. And
yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, definitely a set of probabilities. And they don't, if they are somehow getting glimpses of future outcomes and using that information, we know they're not sharing it with us because we are not getting the information, but also we do have our free will. I agree with you on that. So they're not always able to railroad everybody. And even though things aren't always great outside, we do still have that free will to go on a walk and try and enjoy life. But on the scheme of things, what they're actually trying to do, I can't wait to continue that conversation with you, but finish up, because I cut you off.
That's it. I just want thoughts on it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree. I really like the how you drill down again. I'll say it on the probability aspect of it, because that's all it could be. And that's whether you know it or not. We all are aware that we could die tomorrow or not, and that even if you knew you were going to die tomorrow, that was the question you asked me before in the last podcast about the bus stop, how that all affects. Well, that gets into a huge conversation, but it's a spectrum of like the bell curve histogram of outcomes. Really fun podcast, Dan. Really interesting. You make me think. Sorry, I was a little off on a few times because I was just deep in meditation on what you were saying.
Oh no, dude, this is great. And I mean, this is the reason why I enjoy talking with you, because it's a good back and forth. For our listeners, I do not know for certain if the CERN accelerator is some type of time receiver. It would be really cool to imagine it is. It maybe be horrible. What I want to leave everyone with before I say goodbye is this scary thought that even if you could do this, even if you could see the future, that it might in fact be the most tragic, destructive information you were ever given, ever. And that what you do with it could actually lead to terrible outcomes. Anyways, AJ, I want to thank you. I know we went a bit long here. I hope I didn't screw up your day.
No, it's perfect, Dan. I really enjoyed that and look forward to the concluding chapter of our series the next time we speak. And thanks. Thank you again for having me on. And I hope everyone out there has a nice day as well. And I also want to echo your sentiments on the CERN. That is speculation that I lean towards as a probability, but have absolutely no evidence of.
And for all my listeners, so you know, my podcast is funded voluntarily by donation. If you don't have the money, if you're currently cash strapped, you don't need to donate and it's not necessary. But if you do like the podcast and you have the money and you've taken care of your food, your water, your shelter, your N95 masks, your disinfectant clean room, your laser cannons to fight off the mutants, all the things you're going to need for what's about to happen, and you still have money left over, then please feel free to donate to my podcast. There'll be a link to Venmo and PayPal in the description of this podcast. There's also a link to Venmo or PayPal on my SoundCloud homepage, which you can conveniently get to by just plugging in to your browser, imsully.com. And for the Little Saigon Report, myself and AJ, thank you so much for listening, and I hope you guys have a great day.